Hi, good morning and welcome everyone. This is Seek Sustainable Japan. I'm JJ Walsh, your host here in Hiroshima, joined by the amazing Ali Hongo. Thanks for joining, Ali.
Thanks for having me, JJ. It's so wonderful to be back.
Now, for people who don't know Ali Hongo, she's been on the show before. Friend of the show, I would say. You're a mom, you're a wife. You describe yourself as a cat slave. You are head of the content at Shiitake Creative Company and co-founder of Japan Travel Awards. And we were just together at the amazing 2026 Japan Travel Awards. How do you feel now that the awards are done? It's such a great combination of all your year of effort, right?
I feel relieved because there's a lot of preparation going on, but also I feel a little bit sad that it's over. So we need to start preparing for the next one. But I think it was a really wonderful event, and we brought together really great people who are doing amazing things from across Japan. And the event itself was so emotional, and it was really, really great.
I love to see you and Seiya, your partner, on stage talking at the Travel Awards every year. And you're both emotional because it is so much work to get it all together. Award shows in itself are not easy to bring together. But you also are so active in going around the country and seeing all the places in person and writing things up and then judging, of course. How do you find the process? Like, tell us about last year. How many people entered? How many people were given awards? That kind of thing.
Right. So we start the Japan Travel Awards with an open call that usually happens right after Golden Week, mid-May. And we have about a month and a half until the end of July or so for people to apply. And this year we received 206, a record high number of applications, and after that we filtered them down. We selected the finalists. We had 15 finalists. It's a very severe filtering process. And then we travel to every finalist location. We do that every year, just to make sure that the, you know, application is correct and that the place itself, because it's a travel content, if you don't go there, you can't really tell, right? You have to experience it. So to us, it's really important to actually visit those locations and see what the actual experience is like. So we traveled to all the 15 locations, and then this year we had 11 awards.
It's so wonderful to see how, as a judge from the beginning, to see the development of the places and how many more places are included, but also at the networking event this year, to feel the positive enthusiasm of all the people who maybe didn't apply yet, but they're thinking about it and they have this great motivation because of the awards, because of seeing the other people, that what they can do and what's possible. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful part of the event too.
Thank you. I think, you know, with awards, there's always this question, can I really apply? You know, is my business okay? Or am I too small? Or you always have this hesitation. But I think when you see people go up the stage, and with the Japan Travel Awards, we have, you know, businesses that are run just by one person or just a very small team. And of course we have city level entries as well. So it's a very broad range. But I think once you come to see who is winning and you see the variety of different scales of businesses, and I think people feel motivated and know that they can do as well. And they have the confidence that they're doing something really great and they can also apply. So I'm really happy to also see that.
Just a picture here from the networking time. Everybody seems so positive and supportive of each other as people are trying new things and thinking about new ideas. And to me, this year during that networking time seemed different. It's like you're building on this positive enthusiasm year on year. Mm-hmm. People are starting to get this idea that you need to have sustainable, inclusive, accessible, off the beaten track, that these are so appealing for the international market. You must be feeling that as well, right?
Yes. To be honest, I really share the same feeling. And I think this year was, it felt quite different. It felt that people really get it. I have the same feeling. And a lot of people said, like, you know, because when you hear a sustainable travel, when you hear accessible travel, you feel like, sorry, my cat just really wants to make a presence.
Hello, Kitty.
They think like it's something so complicated, something very difficult to do. And they often think that it's something only big companies or big organizations can achieve. But I think with the Japan Travel Awards, it's now been 5 years, and we have different case studies and different businesses to highlight. So I think people are starting to realize that there are things that you can do at every different level, no matter how small or big your business is. So I think the confidence is also growing, but also there is an understanding that travelers are seeking this kind of travel, and they find it really important whether your destination is really caring about the communities or the planet, or whether, you know, they're welcoming to people with different needs, and these, they're just, I think things are connecting at this point.
Yeah, it's awesome to see. Now you're going beyond Japan. Last year, you had a chance to be a speaker at a Travel Massive event in Vietnam. What was that like? Was it interesting to speak to a different part of Asia audience?
It was wonderful. It was just such an incredible moment, because Travel Massive is a community that brings together people from really all over the world. And for us, it was the first time to kind of be exposed to such a wide community focused on travel, because we're Japan centered. So it felt really nice to be out there. This was the very first Travel Massive conference, and it was held in Danan last August. And it was just wonderful to hear different people's perspectives, and Vietnam, the venue, it's just becoming a country that people really want to visit. So they were discussing a lot of things, like how we can gather more, how we can invite more people to come. And there are so many people working there to make that happen. So it was wonderful. It was just such a beautiful place with so many people sharing ideas, and it was just bursting with energy. It was wonderful.
And an all-female panel, it looked like, which is amazing to see.
This was the only all-female panel. Yes. Oh, we had people from Vietnam, working in Vietnam, and people working in Thailand, and I was representing Japan. So we were all trying to figure out what's coming next for travel in the next year. So we ran out of time.
Yeah, I'm sure. There was too much to talk about. One of the things you did at the Japan Travel Awards in Tokyo event this year was also the forum, the travel forum, as a way to pass on knowledge from award winners. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a new, longer segment this year. Right. How did you feel that went?
Mm-hmm. We wanted to share the experiences of some people who are actually building those travel destinations from scratch. And we think that it's really important to hear their voices, learn about their struggles and how they overcame different challenges along the way. So we thought that we wanted to organize like a little bit more hands-on session as well, where people can, you know, ask a lot of questions and learn from those people who are actually doing the work. And I think I think that there were so many questions, and I think next year we probably need a more extended Q&A session, because there were a lot of people who wanted to ask a lot of questions, and I think they were quite intrigued and wanted to learn from those people. We had Marika Tazawa from Korabito Stay in Nagano, and Sho Suzuki, who is trying to open Nagaoka City in Niigata Prefecture through gastronomy. and he's doing a lot of things and building everything from scratch. And we had Stasha Matsumoto from In Kimono. She's based in Tokyo, and she has this inclusive and wonderful, sustainably focused kimono business as well. So they're really opening up their destinations, and they're such a small team, and they do so much. So we wanted to hear really how they do it and how, and you know, yeah, just learn from them.
Yeah, and we see, of course, a foreign, longtime international resident invested in Japanese culture and Japanese business who's on the panel speaking in Japanese. And of course, Ali, you're completely fluent as well, having gone through school here. Are you noticing that more and more, that longtime foreign professionals who are based in Japan are getting more involved in inbound travel?
Actually, I felt that this year really strongly. We had so many amazing applicants in the Japan Travel Awards who are exactly as what you described, long-time foreign residents in Japan who are completely fluent in the language, who have studied in their subject here in Japan and overseas, and they are doing a lot of work with local communities to open up their destinations. So it was really wonderful to see this how integrated foreigners are, you know, really doing a very important job here. And I wish this is more recognized because their teams are really wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, you know, the smaller businesses as well. And this idea that you don't have to be perfect when you apply, that exactly. I've seen over the years, you as a team working with some applicants that aren't quite ready. And over the years, they develop and they become award winners later on, every year trying to make positive change. And that's another kind of hurdle, I think, in people's minds. Oh, we're not quite ready, you know, but just apply. And that's part of the training process, right?
Exactly. To us, it's really important to see that people really have a vision and they really want to change things. And often they just don't know how to start or where to start. But I think the intention is what matters the most. And I think if you have that intention, you will eventually reach that level where you know you can apply to the next stage. And we've seen that happen. Actually, you know, our winner, Hakko House from Niigata, they applied the year 2 years ago, and unfortunately they were not selected as winners because we had some feedback for further improvement. And when we share that feedback, it really depends on the receiving and how they will treat this feedback, right? Of course, some people just feel like maybe, you know, it's essential to take it, to listen to that. And some people just don't think that that's the case. But in Niigata's case, they just printed it out and shared it with the whole community and studied it as a textbook, basically. And they applied all the changes that we suggested would help them. Such as, you know, have English on the website, just minor additions that now, you know, you can apply without investing so much money, and they did it, and they reapplied the next year, and they won. So this is one of the examples.
That's wonderful to see. I talked with Swastika and Trisit yesterday from Seaside Fukushima Tours, and they were the social impact award winners this year. And it was wonderful to see and talk about this area of Japan, which is working so hard to reestablish itself as a wonderful destination to visit. Of course, you have the dark, the difficult past history, but in many ways, visitors are drawn to that. And to see how places can be, people as well, can be resilient and overcome such diversity and create kind of a new future. And I thought that was such a wonderful award, and it's showing diversity of also different kinds of destinations. And we're seeing more need for that in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel that's the case. And with the Fukushima seaside case, you know, they're just doing such a wonderful job, because what happened in Fukushima, no one could predict it in the local people. And but they're still trying to tell their story of, like, you know, what their area was like, what their culture was like. And I think they're trying to connect those pieces and say people used to live here, and this is what this place is about, and there's a culture that still persists here. And they're trying to just create tours that see things from many different angles, without, of course, forgetting what happened and the March 11th tragedy. So I think this is a fascinating tour that just makes you think of travel and in so many different ways.
Absolutely. So much more to explore. Mm-hmm. And on that note, a wonderful chance to talk about your book that's just been published, 70 Remarkable Japanese Places. Well done. This was 3 years in the making. Is that right?
I think a little bit more than 3 years. Yes. It took a long time. Yes, we started actually, this is my copy here as well. We started this project just when in the middle of COVID, right? When we started the Japan Travel Awards. And we were thinking to just travel for a year, sort of like, you know, discover more places and just, you know, uplift the industry in general, because at that time there was nothing happening and you know, no one really knew what's going to happen. But, you know, 1 year turned into three, because as we kept going, we felt like, you know, these stories also need to be told, and these people also deserve a highlight in the book. So, yes, it took about 3 years. 3 years of the Japan Travel Awards, and this book has 70 places, including winners, finalists, and just places that we kind of encountered along the way of our travels.
And the design is beautiful. It is bilingual. That must have been a design challenge, how to have English and Japanese, but also have space so it doesn't feel too cramped, has beautiful big photos. I love that it's a coffee table type of book where you can just keep it in your house and just leaf through and get new ideas. Is wonderful.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly the intention. And we just wanted to just make it as a gift book. You know, we want it to be something that people, you know, once visit Japan, they'll probably want to buy a copy to someone else who's coming to Japan the year after that, or, you know, and just kind of pass it forward and just have a copy at their home. But design, as you mentioned, yes, it was quite challenging, but our designers are very, very, very talented. Thank you guys for making that. And so they found a way to make it work.
Are these all your own photos from when you visited all the sites as well?
Yes. About 90%, and some of the photos we had to receive official photos because of the bad, you know, it was bad weather when we visited or something like that. But most of it is our photos. Yes.
Right. And then one really nice, of course, you highlight all of the main themes of the Japan Travel Awards, accessibility, inclusion, diversity, and of course, sustainability. How they're doing better than the status quo, the places in Japan. We can't expect this from every place. So it's worth highlighting places that are doing it a little bit better, right?
Exactly. Yes. That was our intention.
And another really unique point, I thought, I like the design, and each part of the map mm-hmm. has a QR code so that you can link with your phone to the latest applications for the Japan Travel Awards or the latest pub marketing or blog posts that you're working on. Right. So it's not just an outdated mm-hmm. book, which unfortunately becomes outdated once you publish, right?
Exactly.
You can keep adding more information. So I thought that was such a nice idea.
There was a big challenge because, you know, we wanted to include the, you know, the the small data, like the address and access and that kind of information that people need. But also people nowadays, they travel with Google Maps. And we thought in the end, like, this is just going to take a lot of space on the pages. So we have a QR code to, as you mentioned, all the content, and that leads to a list on our website. And you can see just the latest information, because business hours change, you know, addresses change and that kind of stuff. So it's important to have it that way, I think.
And of course, you're representing all over Japan, from Hokkaido all the way to Okinawan Islands. Mm-hmm. Was that one of the themes of the book? You were aiming at representing all areas of Japan?
Right. So we followed the applicants of the Japan Travel Awards and we traveled. So unfortunately, we don't have Hokkaido, simply because we didn't have any applications from Hokkaido during those 3 years. But Hokkaido is such a wonderful place. I think it deserves its own book. There's just so many places to visit. And I think if we do part two, we will have many applications from Hokkaido, I hope. So this time it's just from Tohoku until Okinawa, just following all the places that applied for the Japan Travel Awards and that we traveled for the Japan Travel Awards. But it features, I think, almost all prefectures, except for Hokkaido and maybe Yamaguchi or just a few. It's very diverse in terms of regions.
It must have been really hard to limit it to 70.
Yes. Oh, that was a discussion with our designer. I wanted to, you know, I was like, are we ready for 80, 100? And he was like, no, Ali, at some point you have to stop, because otherwise we're never going to print this.
Yeah. Did you have a team that was narrowing it down to 70? I have a cat who wants to be in too.
Hi. Oh, so pretty.
He took the background down. Never mind. That's the wonderful thing about going live. You can't control these things.
Cats, they live in their own house. It's not your house.
It's their house. It's basically their life. So I'm lucky to be a part of it. Now, you have, of course, featuring beautiful food. Mm-hmm. Part of the sustainable travel initiatives, of course, is encouraging places to also offer vegan, vegetarian, sustainable. Also, try not to use only single-use plastics. But there's so much that you could talk about when you visit these places, right? But do you find that part of the application process, when you're asking these questions, it helps people kind of get in mind, oh, maybe we should do this? Or
yes. So we our application for the Japan Travel Awards, it's quite detailed, and we divide it into different sections in line with the core categories of the Japan Travel Awards. So we have an inbound section and sustainability, and then accessibility, inclusion, LGBTQ. And each section has its own checklist. And we ask people to say, to check the parts that they are confidently doing or they are approaching and have in certain ways cleared. And then we have an extra space for people to explain what additional things they're doing. And sometimes people tell us, oh my God, this is so detailed. I don't know if I can go to the next stage if I don't check all the boxes. But we tell them that's not really the point. We just want to see your approach in different ways. And we have received a lot of feedback from people that just filling in that application has really opened their eyes of what they're actually missing at this stage. And this is really a great feedback, because that's our intention. We want people to just by filling the application to notice that these things are being questioned, and this is what we think is important. It's not just about a beautiful place. It's about how you are preparing to welcome people who have different awarenesses and different needs and different thoughts about travel, and that's really important.
Now, you mentioned having English on the website, or having some online social media, and that's a way for customers to find them.
Yes.
Is that kind of a foundation that most applicants should have?
It's not a must at the application stage, but we highly recommend it for them, because if you don't have this information in English, just people will not be able to find you. And a lot of the time, they tell us that, oh my God, if we have English on the website, that, you know, foreign guests will expect that we are perfect and that we can manage everything in English. But we tell them that that's not really the expectations, because people just want to know and they need that information on the website. And once they come, they're okay with not having perfect English, because that's part of travel. You know, when we travel to other countries, we don't expect to have fluent English speakers everywhere. Or speakers in our native languages, you know. But it's important to just give them the basic information, how they can find you, what is your location like, what they can expect, and this is just enough. So at the application, at the time of application, if they don't have it, we're not going to disqualify them just for that, if they cover all the other core categories, requirements. But we definitely advise them at the feedback stage to include that. And we provide the reasoning for that.
Yeah, I think people, like now we have technology, right? A lot of people are using translation tools to understand websites and things. But that's an extra step that a lot of international visitors, it's very difficult to do, to copy and paste all the text or to change it into their language. So even having basic information in English, a contact form, that really helps a lot. Or even just a Google business page.
Exactly.
Where you have the title of the place or description of the place in English, right?
Exactly, exactly. I think it's really, really important.
And then, of course, Google is also changing now on the maps to start to have a little icon if it's accessible for wheelchairs, for example.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the foundational kind of targets for places in Japan in the Japan Travel Awards, right?
Yes, exactly. And we do check that, and we always advise them, because it's just a way to tell your guests, this is how we are ready to welcome you, and please come, you know. So It's a minor addition, but it's really important for many people, because when I travel as well, you know, I want to know, if I'm traveling with my kid, I want to know if they represent themselves as a family friendly location, because I don't want to, you know, cause any, I don't know, I just, it's important for me to know whether I can go there and just enjoy it as a family with a small kid.
And Josh Grisdale, is one of the judges, and he has been from the start, and he himself uses a wheelchair.
Yes.
So understanding, and he runs Accessible Japan. So understanding that it's a real need, and it helps everyone.
Exactly.
Once you make things accessible, that helps mothers who are pushing sleeping babies in strollers. That helps elderly people who have difficulty walking, or anyone who has an injury. Exactly. It ends up helping everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Even you know, your luggage delivery service, Yamato, you know, just having a slope, that helps them when they carry heavy luggage as well. And also foreigners carrying suitcases, you know, having that infrastructure really just helps everyone.
Absolutely. And then the idea of inclusion, diversity and inclusion. You had Georgie making such a nice speech this year at the awards, and In Kimono won 2 awards.
Yes.
For accessible tourism, but also inclusive tourism. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So In Kimono is a Tokyo-based kimono styling and photography service run by Stasia Matsumoto. She's a long-term resident in Japan. She's from Poland. And her business, you know, when you visit there, you can just, from the entrance, you can immediately feel how inclusive and how welcoming it is. You know, she has rainbow flag and she has like everyone is welcome. And she has done this from the very beginning of her business because she herself thought this is really important to show everyone that, you know, they don't have to question whether they can go in advance, right? So this was a big thing that she talked about. And she said that some people who had visited her studio told her the story of, you know, previously going to a different place and asking, oh, we're a same-sex couple, can we go? And she said, like, I cannot imagine confirming that. Is it okay to go with my husband? Or, you know, it just sounds so ridiculous when you put it that way. So I think she just wanted to just say, you know, from the very beginning, please don't ask these questions. Of course, you're welcome. Of course, we're happy and we look forward to having you. So that's why she created a very inclusive environment. And it was so touching to see that. And also for the accessibility award, she took a wheelchair kitsuke kimono styling license to be able to welcome travelers in a wheelchair and wear the kimono on them. Her studio itself is not accessible, but she travels to each location to their hotels or wherever they're based in Japan to help them get dressed in a beautiful kimono. And she's really going on the extra mile of like just trying to approach every single person's need, and yeah. She's just.
It's amazing. And I had a session with her last month as well. And it was, I just really wanted to spend time with her and experience it for myself. And usually I don't wear kimono, but she makes you feel so comfortable. She helps you choose colors that you're interested in. But she also has this really good foundation of traditional knowledge. She has studied it. Yes. The traditional culture of it. She deeply understands it. So she gives you a seminar, a little seminar as part of the dressing up day.
Exactly.
And she's an amazing photographer. So she yes. has this great package, really an educational, but also just a wonderful experience.
Yes, yes, yes. And you can just feel her passion about kimono. You know, she has so many stories. It's like, you know, a drawer here, a drawer here, you know, like just she keeps adding information to everything she does. And it's really, really fascinating. You can spend like just weeks and weeks with her.
Absolutely. And she was nervous about being on the panel, mm-hmm. But she has such great advice to give to people who are thinking about how do I become more accessible? How do I become more inclusive, right?
Exactly. Yes. She had wonderful things to say. And you know, just like she's running the business by herself, so she really sees it everything from first perspective. And you know, she just said, you know, just please do it. Don't hesitate, because people really, really, that's really important for your guests to know that you're welcoming, to know that you're inclusive, to know that you can approach and just hear them out, because they feel extra welcome and feel extra respected and feel more attached to your place. And they're more likely to return that way or like introduce you to someone else. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I also had the chance this month to talk with your grand prize winner, mm-hmm. Tachibana-san in Ryokan Ohana.
Yes.
And she just has such an amazing, of course, tradition of mm-hmm. continuing the family legacy of running the business.
Yes.
But so open and, of course, so high end. Mm. Like this is a real luxury travel stay.
Right.
But she gives such a friendly opening, mm-hmm. connect you to locals and deep culture feeling.
Exactly.
This is such a great example for other ryokan inns, traditional inns around Japan, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly what we felt, because when we traveled for the on-site evaluation, we had that image, you know, this is a very luxurious place, you know, this is perhaps for just a certain group of travelers. But when we went there, we felt like we're just really entering someone's home. You know, everyone was just so friendly and welcoming and very down to earth. You know, they were just very... how to say, like extremely polite, but they were not like in your face, like most, a lot of luxurious places are. And we realized that that is because they're continuing their family legacy, right? This place used to be their own house. The families, you know, the Tachibana clan, which used to run, they owned the Yanagawa area, and they were the feudal lords of that area. So that family has been through a lot, and right, and that's what they told us. You know, it's just it's a family home that is now trying to, you know, adjust to the times and become something different. So you have this family connection, and you feel that as soon as you enter. It's a very, very cozy, welcoming place.
Yeah, and so accepted in the community.
Exactly.
I love the story she tells about when her mother or grandmother came back to run the inn, and they came from the regal class, the rulers.
Yes.
And so when the rulers become the people doing the service for other people, it was a big shock for the local community. And just such a great story of how they said, you know, it's going to be embarrassing if you guys fail. Mm-hmm. But how wonderful, right, to change the family legacy from, you know, up to same level.
Exactly.
They're working with you.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're doing that through a lot of collaborations. You know, you have that breakfast on the river. You know, they work with boat operators, local boat operators, and if you, when you go to the room, you find this like small brochure that introduces the businesses of all the places, for example, that supply the amenities or that supply the tea, and you can see how they're collaborating and really doing extra thing to introduce them, not just as like Ohana amenities, but like that specific business amenities, which I thought was really, really wonderful.
And also having fun with it. Mm-hmm. She introduced how they have a scary summer event with the yokai and the lanterns and the spookiness of it. And that's a Japanese tradition in summer to have that scary chill so that you feel cooler. But it's not, you know, like something you wouldn't expect from a high-end place, right?
No. And it's also a nationally designated cultural asset. And that was one thing she said when she was sending us off. She was like, please come with your child the next time. You know, he can run around here. And I was like, oh, no, I'm scared because he can break something. And she was like, that is fine. We want kids to run around, and we want them to experience, you know, the area. And I was like, wow, that's very different.
That's wild. Mm. And I think this is something that a lot of us working in travel are often asked to promote places for the high-end market. Mm-hmm. And I know you and Seiya, from the beginning, you've also always focused on small or medium size or entrepreneurs, trying to encourage the off the beaten track. But you must feel that some of the big businesses must be interested in being in the Japan Travel Awards. How do you find that balance to promote places that are less seen, for example?
Right. So for us, really, the scale of the business is not really important. It's we don't ask like how many employees you have or what's your team size, or we don't ask anything like that in the application. For us, really, the essence of the business and the vision is the most important thing. So this, anyone can apply, and you know, it's free to apply for the awards. So even if you run like a multi hotel chain, or you're just a one person's operation business, it's fine. So when we receive the applications, we just, you know, we're looking for the story, we're looking for the idea or the vision, and I think that's how we filter them.
And so many of the award winners have this passion, right? That they know that they're doing something that's meaningful to them.
Right.
So for example, the dive shop that won last year for most sustainable prize, trying to grow the coral, and then for the diving, you put that coral that you choose back into the coral reef as something that's so needed in the environment. But such a unique idea, right?
Exactly, because So this is it's a place called Lagoon in Okinawa. Let me just show it. It's in the book as well here. So what they're doing is just a dive shop. And then, you know, Okinawa is so famous for diving. And you have a lot of shops like that where you can just, you know, rent gear and go and dive. But what these guys are doing is, like, because Okinawa, because of over-tourism and because of so many, you know, things happening, the corals are just dying. And, you know, for people who call this place home, this is a life-threatening situation. So they're trying to restore that with the help of tourists and just make the experience for them extra special, extra memorable, by planting the seeds of the corals while they're diving. Just, you know, as a traveler, you're not only just enjoying the ocean, but you're actually contributing to the restoration of the ecosystem. And that just, I think, it helps you feel so much better about traveling and yeah, so much happier.
Absolutely. And then in terms of accessibility, you've featured a lot of hotels that have accessible rooms and ramps. But also, this one really stands out in Nagano, Togakushi, and how you can go on a hike and it's accessible to wheelchairs. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be a hotel, right? It could be a day trip place to visit.
Exactly. And what Togakushi is doing, and they have a dedicated universal tourism, accessible tourism desk at their local bureau. And what they're doing is really to try to make every experience in Togakushi accessible as well. So, for example, you can also do dual ski in winter. Togakushi is a very famous winter destination as well. And you can rent a ski equipment and ski, even if you have mobility restrictions. And also, you can rent a lot of outdoor wheelchairs as well, and go on those hiking paths, which are, you know, they're covered in gravel, so it's quite difficult if you're using a regular wheelchair. But you can rent a specific outdoor wheelchair to walk that path. So they're really trying to make everything, every experience accessible in the area, and they're doing a great job.
And then I think it was last year, you also had a stand-up and paddleboard company that could lift someone onto the boat. And then you have zero gravity, of course, scuba diving accessible. You know, it seems, I think for a lot of businesses, it seems like an impossible hurdle. Mm-hmm. And Happy Raft as well, right? Like being very family and very inclusive. Yeah. But once you see these examples, I think they can learn so much of the strategy and really think creatively about how things might work, right?
Exactly. As you say, like some people just, you know, it depends on the destination, but there are certain financial investment as well. But there are also a lot of things that you can do without investing so much money to just improve the situation. For example, like a simple ramp just to you know, enter a facility. This doesn't cost like more than 15,000 yen, for example. So it's not really a huge investment for many businesses. And just having that, a portable ramp on and your facility, really opens the door literally to everyone. So there are things that we can all do. And I think highlighting those things by showcasing different examples of how other people are doing it in other parts of Japan or other businesses, that's what we really want to do. Just share that information and encourage other people to just give them hints. Oh, this is what we can do in our own business.
Absolutely. And I just went to a wonderful place in Kobe, which I will definitely introduce the Japan Travel Awards and hope that they apply. But he had renovated an old house in one of the shotengais, the shopping streets, which are often shuttered, and in outside city areas, there is less and less tenants, right?
Right.
He got some funding from Kobe to renovate it. Mm-hmm. And his first idea was to make it accessible, not only for the customers, but for getting staff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But he realized I can get more staff if I open the doors to hiring people in wheelchairs who are great workers. Mm-hmm. But usually that's a big hurdle for getting labor too, right?
Exactly, exactly. And that's really, really important because, you know, we were talking about how accessibility really helps everyone. But one good example from a past winner, Naniwa Issui in Shimane, that's a very old ryokan that is really investing in making it more and more accessible. But what they, their policy, for example, is like we make one accessible, we improve one accessible feature for the guests, we improve one accessible feature for the staff. So, for example, you know, in the past, they used to carry like a lot of trays to the dining area, but they changed it into a slope that cuts through the dining place. So now it's so much more convenient for the people to move around and, you know, collect the dishes and carry the trays and everything. So it just shows that, you know, being able to invest really helps your staff's well-being as well. It helps everyday efficiency and even
Absolutely. Also for inclusion, and this is something that Georgie was talking about, it seems like such a small thing to have a rainbow flag on the front of your business or the check-in counter, like W. Osaka, who won the inclusion award before. They're just very open about everybody is welcome. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the view from the public, sometimes it seems difficult for businesses to be so open.
Right. Yes.
And obvious. But it's important to make that next little step, right?
Exactly. I think and this is like something that we hear a lot as well, because a lot of I would say like 99% of the Japanese operators are their mindset is like, of course, everyone is welcome, you know, and they feel like showing that or saying that is like, in a sense, it's not polite. It's not, you know, it kind of goes, I don't know, if they feel like it's just odd to say it. But we tell them that, for example, you know, if you're a traveler coming to Japan for the very first time, and maybe in Tokyo, not so much, but in the countryside, for example, when you go, you don't know, you really don't know how you will be treated there, right? Because Japan has this image of being a still conservative country, for example. They don't know if it's okay to hold hands or, you know, what bars to go into or that kind of stuff. So that's why, you know, showing that, oh, we are LGBTQ friendly, you know, just having a rainbow flag and say like, please come in. We're, you know, we're safe environment. Just showing that just makes people feel at ease without having to check in advance or, you know, go on their phones and see like whether this place is LGBTQ friendly or, you know, a lot of travelers also don't do that, but some people really feel like it's important to do that. So just having it there is like it's really just it would just benefit everyone.
And even small changes like when people register to stay, why make them choose between gender, right? Mm-hmm. Why not just let them, you know, choose any or NA as one of the options? I mean, do we need to know people's gender when they register? Mm-hmm. You're going to see it on the passport if it's an international traveler. You can get that information. But even changing the form makes people feel more included, more welcome, right?
Exactly. And it's a small thing that you can do, you know, just, you know, as you say, gender, like, I think that goes back in the days when, you know, there were onsens and, you know, like for the packed to big tours. But it's travel is changing nowadays and that's not the style. So this is a little bit old fashion. So it's really not important anymore. And having, you know, I don't want to say or, you know, just having that option just makes people, you know, be who they are and then feel welcome as they are. So it's really important to address that.
Yeah, wonderful. And then, of course, for checking sustainability, anyone who's traveled around Japan now knows that a lot of hotels are saying SDGs, SDGs everywhere. But when you actually check, well, what are you actually doing? Are you still providing single-use plastic bottles in the rooms? Why, right? Are you still using single-use plastic amenities? Why not refill? So those little checks as part of the application or when you visit and then the feedback also really helps them become a more sustainable business as they start thinking about what is the strategy? How do we make that happen, right?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, like in Japan, we also hear that from the actual destinations that a lot of, you know, Japanese travelers, especially those who are used to have everything, you know, travel, just the full package, they would like sometimes complain that their com is not in, you know, provided in a plastic bag or their slippers are not provided. So I think it's really important to also educate travelers as well and say, like, you know, for the sake of our planet, we would like to reduce that. And if you really want to have it, you can buy it here, you know, like just provide those options. But I think international travelers coming to Japan, they're much more aware and much more hesitant to use that because we really don't need a comb in a plastic or slippers in plastic, you know, like we just don't need that. So let's just, you know, try to remove that little by little. And
And it's such a nice added effect is there's so much less clutter. Mm-hmm. Like when you go into the bathroom, you have your own toothbrush. Who travels without a toothbrush? I don't understand this, right? So you go into the bathroom, you have space to put your own things. And, you know, reusable shampoo, reusable body soap is now is pretty standard. Why not have refill water stations next to the ice machine? Most hotels already have that, right? So,
Exactly.
Little things can make a big difference, right?
Yes, definitely.
So we're about 8 minutes till the end of our talk. So many wonderful ideas. Mm-hmm. What are you working on this year that you're kind of excited about? Or what would you give advice for people thinking about applying for this year?
So the next round of applications is going to start again in May, I think the end of April or May, mid-May. As I said, you know, it's really important to have a vision and to have a story, to have a purpose of why you're doing what you're doing and just really tell us like what's the passion and the idea behind it. Doesn't really matter like if your business is a one person run business or if it's 100 people run business. The essence of it is like really how you're what are you trying to change in travel and what's the backstory of that and how you're, you know, approaching to other different people, different travelers. So that's the only thing I would advise anyone who's like thinking of applying. What I'm looking forward to this year, well, it's a big question. Just really excited to work on more projects that are, you know, We work with a lot of clients and who are also starting to really embrace that idea of inclusion and diversity. And we're really happy to work with clients who share that vision as well. So I hope that the rest of the year we'll focus more on projects like that, creative projects. Yeah.
And congratulations on getting some big sponsors, which help you do Japan Travel Awards and Shiitake Creative Projects so well. So to keep it free for people applying to have these big sponsors must really be a big support.
Oh, yes, definitely. So last year, for the first time, we were sponsored by Klook. And thanks to them, you know, really, because traveling around Japan is just to visit the finalists, just that is already a huge amount of money in terms of transportation. And also organizing the ceremony and the event. So that, you know, having a sponsor is just such an important part, of course, for the financial part as well, but also in terms of like support, like just knowing that a big company like Klook is really sharing the vision and is really thinking that our work is important for the future of travel and the travel industry as a whole, that was just such a boost in confidence. And you know, we really felt so moved and so supported and just very, very grateful to know that they're willing to just focus on the same vision and just help us out.
That's so good. The one thing I was thinking, so you've done the publication of these 70 remarkable places, you do the travel awards, you're doing all of the consulting as you're going around checking and talking to people. What could be next for Shiitake Creative? I was thinking an app. Have you thought about developing an app which connects to all of the information of the awards and the book and things?
Oh, that's a great idea. And I'll share it with our designers right after this. I think they'll be happy to hear about the new project. But that's a wonderful idea, actually. And, you know, we're constantly trying to think of, like, how to connect really the dots and, like, how to bring people to these places, because we really feel that these places really need more recognition, and every traveler will benefit from visiting those places. So we're constantly trying to figure out, like, how to make that happen. And yes, so the book was just released. That was like the first print version of, you know, all these travels. And now we're also revamping our website a little bit to add more information, to make it more practical for visitors. And yes, an app is a wonderful idea. Thank you.
And then after the awards, do you go back to the award winners and help them develop their marketing? Because I know marketing is another core part of your job, right?
We work with some of them, and some of them have expressed, you know, the need for, like, improving certain things, maybe their website or their social media or something like that. So we don't work with all of them because not all of them have the same need. But just those that have reached out to us for any additional support. Yes.
And do you sometimes get government funding as well to do some of these projects to help promote regions? Not yet. You did one with JNTO, maybe Japan National Tourism Organization, or?
Yes, we as part of the Shiitake's work, we work with a lot of government organizations and a lot of local bureaus as well. We do a lot of projects such as, you know, like develop like travel brochures or websites. And last year we worked on the promotion for the Tama and the Tokyo Islands area, for example. We built their websites and social media. So we do a lot of those projects as well as part of Shiitake. We are a creative agency. But we don't receive any government funding to run the awards yet.
Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's another part of your work, which is good work. Yeah, wonderful. Now, as a working mother, how do you find balance? I saw this post from last year, and it's really hard, right? As a working mother of a young child, you said your son is about to start elementary school. How? Yeah. Give some advice to other working women, because we need women to work and to have kids, and that balance is hard, right?
It is extremely hard, and I feel like there's just so much pressure, you know, to constantly perform at your best in, like, all the many roles that you have in your life. And I was just reading the other day, like, women make like over 10,000 decisions in a day, you know? And it's just like, it feels so overwhelming, right? Work-life balance, it's very, very difficult. But luckily, you know, my husband understands that because we run the company together. And I think that's really important because he sees my work and I see his work. So recently, but we felt like we need more time on our own just to, you know, think of ideas. And so one thing we started is like having our, you know, he has his own me day during the week, and I have my own me day during the week. Just a couple of hours just to sit and do something that you want to do, whether it's just have a coffee or like go to the library or just a bookstore or like whatever. I, you know, just have a time in silence, away from the cats, away from the kids, away from work. I think that's really important, just to figure out that time and just focus on your own needs as well. Yes. I don't know if that's
That's such good advice. Take time for yourself and schedule it in, right? Mm-hmm. That's so hard to do. So my last question is, I know you have been to so many amazing places all over Japan, but mm-hmm. you have been based in Tokyo for such a long time. Do you ever think the next stage for you might be somewhere else in Japan?
Oh, yes. We think about it all the time. And I would definitely want to explore that and just, you know, have a second base somewhere outside of Tokyo, somewhere that's more quiet. And that's definitely been on our radar. I love Shikoku personally. Maybe that's a destination, but I know also the area you're based in Hiroshima, that's a wonderful place as well. And, you know, as we travel, we discover so many places that are, you know, becoming more and more welcoming with like satellite offices. And so that's definitely maybe in the next 5 years or so, we may be considered.
Yeah, wonderful. I think you would help develop whatever area you settle into as well. But still, there is so much work for tourism, for business in Tokyo. So it is hard to move operations completely out of Tokyo. I understand that.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Everything seems to be centered here in Tokyo. But I think gradually it's going to change a little by little because we have so many active players all over Japan, and they're really starting to show how important it is to focus on the regional development as well. And they're doing a great work to attract more people to come to those areas.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining, Ali. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
Always wonderful to talk to you.
All the good work that you're doing for sustainable travel, inclusive travel, diverse travel. Everything you do highlights these issues so much, but also helps people move to strategy and to develop a better business. So thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you, JJ. It was wonderful to talk to you.
Thanks, everyone, for joining, and see you next time. We have a double header today, so I'm talking with Stuart of Minka Summit later on today, so please join us for that.
Yes. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.